Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you today, Laura?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. The sun's shining. I thought it was going to rain, but I'm happy. It's pretty.
I think it's raining in some places.
Oh.
I was going fishing today and was not able to do that because of the rain.
Oh, well,
other
still
places.
Pretty
so,
here.
Good. All right. Today is Thursday, I think, April 22nd. So if you're listening right now, you're listening live. And on today's show, we're just going to talk about things that I just call quirks in speech-language development with toddlers. Sometimes these things mean like a certain diagnosis or children with a certain diagnosis kind of have these things. Sometimes it's not really associated with the diagnosis. This is just kind of a catch-all show to talk about things that have come up with children that we've seen on our caseloads and just in the conversations that Kate and I have had in the last week, or maybe emails that I've gotten several, or comments on the website, and my website is teachmetotalk.com, so if you've not checked that out yet, I'd love for you to pop over there and see all the great information that's there. But again, this is just kind of a catch-all. We're not talking about one topic in particular. We're just going to ramble a little bit today with several
even
things.
More so than our usual ramblings. So get ready if you happen to be listening.
Yeah, and today would be a great day for a call. If you have ever wanted to call us but have always thought, oh, I don't want to miss what's coming next, or I don't want to get them off topic, or I'm not sure if I should ask this or not, today would be a great day for that. So please call us. That number is 1-718-766-4332. We would love to have your question today, and until then, we're just going to blab on about these seven or eight little things I have written down. The first one that I want to talk about, Kate, is the one that you were talking about with a little guy that I think you might be seeing now with who has a little quirk. So do you want to go into that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
Well, I think I started, and this was a legitimate, Laura, I've been meaning to run this by you for a while anyway because she's my go-to speech expert and good friend, but I have the advantage of being able to talk to her regularly. And today's question was, and I thought I knew what it was, but I wanted to, you know, make sure that I was on the right track. It's a little girl, actually, that...
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Little girl, cute little thing. She's about 21 months old, and her developmental history is somewhat significant because she was born prematurely. I think she was about 6 weeks early, and she had some... initially some gross motor delay, and she was seen by a PT regularly, and that has really pretty much resolved itself. I think she's seen one time a month now for a little bit of PT, but gross motor stuff has come along nicely, fine motor stuff pretty nice. I'm actually seeing her for speech, so her play is really great. I mean, she seems to be, you know, cognitively doing very well and all that, but so my primary focus with her, as it is with many of my kids, is speech, and she's doing well in some ways with that. She's picking up quite a few signs. She will, well, one of the kind of interesting things about her is that she seems to respond to some of the cues we use with kids who apparently or have a parent suspected apraxia, and I haven't certainly gone there with her, but it's just been interesting to me that she does respond to some of the sound cueing strategies we use. Like if I try and get her to say more or mama, she doesn't come anywhere close unless I tell her, oh, put your lips together, use your kissy sound, mama, and then she'll do it. But when she says something or tries to, I've got the birds in the background. Sounds like I'm at a golf tournament. And so anyway, everything she says is very, I'm going to say, raspy or hoarse sounding, you know, and I always, I mean, since I started seeing her probably 7-8 months ago, that's been the case, and as I told you earlier today, Laura, she doesn't tend to have, it's not as though she's very congested. I mean, now and again she will be, but generally she's not. She's a pretty healthy little thing, but she always kind of has that raspy, hoarse sounding voice. And I guess the other thing I didn't, the other little clue I didn't give to our listeners is she does have a history and still has some issue with reflux. And I don't know what medication she's on, but she is kind of on a maintenance dose of some antacid so that, she, you know, the reflux isn't an obvious problem. But my question to Laura was, what's up with that raspy, hoarse-sounding voice that this kid has chronically? I mean, that's all she has.
And I think that it's related, still related to her reflux. And, of course, I don't know that for sure. Her doctor, you know, or a doctor would probably have to rule that out or whatever, but that happens a lot in kids that I've seen with that history of reflux. I told you today that I had gotten an email about a really similar situation with another little guy that's out west somewhere, and his family had been stationed overseas in the military, and they had felt like that they had not gotten to see a lot of developmental specialists, and so they've gotten back home to the United States, and there she reported a real similar issue with her little boy in that he, every time he tries to talk, it just sounds like a grunt or, oh, you know, she said it's real caveman speech, and he always sounds like he's sick, and he always sounds like something's going on. So he's undergoing lots of GI tests right now in addition to his developmental assessments that he's doing in the early intervention system in the state that they live in. And so, I do think that happens with kids, and I think the reason that we don't see them being outwardly congested is that it's a different system that's making, you know, causing it to be hoarse. It's not, it may not necessarily be a respiratory thing. You know, it could really be related to that reflux. So I think that that mom should speak to the physician about that and see if the physician thinks that's a possibility. And there, that just may be, you know, she just may need more medicines, or if that, you know, doesn't seem to be it, they could certainly investigate other ways. If it's not keeping her from being able to communicate, though, I'm not sure that it's that big of a deal. I mean, how do you feel about it? When she's talking, is it so abnormal that you think people would go, oh, my gosh, what's wrong with her?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. Her mother never really seems terribly concerned, and at one point we had an OT on the team, and we still have a PT, and I seem to be the only one who kind of says, you know, she's still sounding kind of hoarse again today. I don't know that she's terribly concerned. I kind of wonder, you know, I don't know that much about reflux. I know that in adults, long-term-wise, it can do some damage to their esophagus and blah, 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 and I don't really know if that's an ongoing concern for a two-year-old, but, and she is, you know, she is beginning to get, like, the bilabial sounds that I'm modeling for, and,
right,
but just the overall tone of her voice is peculiar, you know, and she does have,
yeah,
she did have, as a, you know, when she first got into first step, she certainly had some tone issues and that sort of thing, and so I think those kids are kind of at a risk for reflux because they're, you know,
right,
they're, systems are kind of floppy, and she certainly had the reflux. She, there's nothing obvious about her now that would tell you she has reflux. She doesn't,
right,
you know, have anything obvious, but she is still treated for it, so obviously the physician feels it's an ongoing concern. So the mom's really actually pretty good about, you know, follow-up and doing the testing and all that, so I think I'll probably just suggest it would be a good idea.
Right.
You know, I don't think any physician, her pediatrician, and she's has seen a number of specialists like an orthopod and a couple others for various things, but nobody else has really. Of course, she tends to be really quiet. I can get her going and I can get her vocalizing and trying to verbalize, and I probably hear her voice more than, I mean, I'm sure her mom hears it, but wouldn't surprise me if she didn't say much around the doctor or even a different therapist, or she can be real quiet. So
right.
I think I'll just suggest that it'd be a good idea to check that out and see what's going on. So, yeah.
And it may not be that. I mean, she just may have kind of a naturally deeper voice. You know, sometimes I think children like that really do have some motor planning issues, and it even affects their vocal folds, their vocal cords, so that they don't. They just sound odd. So, you know, I think about that as being apraxia kind of at the vocal fold level. Sometimes, you know, we think about that with kids that they're laughing and you can see them laughing, but there's no sound. You know, their little faces are all scrunched up and, you know, like, ha, 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 without the ha, ha, ha. You know, and so I think about our kids that cry and don't make a sound. I think about those kids, you know, having motor planning problems or apraxia or whatever you want to call it at the vocal fold level. So that's a possibility as well, maybe, just that, you know, she doesn't get great closure there. She would really sound more breathy if that were happening, though. But those words are so subjective. Even,
right.
And when you think about a two-year-old.
This is pretty clearly, you know, I get my normal seasonal respiratory stuff, and then I keep talking because I talk so much with work.
Uh-huh.
And in life, but she sounds just like I do. It's very hoarse. It's very raspy.
Mm-hmm.
I would never call it breathy. You know what I mean?
It's, okay.
You want to say she must have a bad cold, but she doesn't.
Right, right.
And she pretty much always, any kind of vowel sound comes out like that.
Yeah. I think that's more of a medical issue, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, again, I'm not a GI person or an ENT.
Nor am I, but yeah. I think I will talk to Mom and see if she won't follow up on that. I just kind of feel like I keep thinking it's going to resolve itself well in 7 or 8 months. She still has that same.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's not necessarily, I know that kind of apraxic voice that you're describing. I've certainly had those, and it's not that. This really does make you think she has a terrible cold, and yet she doesn't.
Nothing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think it's more of a medically related thing that a physician would need to kind of take a second look at. So that's good. But, you know, that's not actually the question that I wanted to start with today. But that's
Oh, shoot. What was it? I don't remember my other one.
The little boy that says, huh? Huh?
Oh, well, that was my other question of the week. I had two Laura questions. Okay, well, shall I ask this one?
Go ahead.
Okay. I have this little guy on my caseload. I haven't seen him for very long. Again, I'm playing speech therapist, as I like to do. And cute little fella. He just turned 2, and I've only seen him, say 6 times, so, you know, a month and a half. And he seems bright. He has maybe 2 or 3 words, and one of the words is vroom vroom for tractor, because he lives out in the country and he loves tractors. So he when he says vroom vroom with his finger pointed, he means I'd really rather be on my tractor, lady. But and buck buck for the chickens they have, and so, and ball, he can say by sometimes every once in a while. That's about it. So anyway, he, as I talk to him, and he does it with everybody, his mom, his sister, as you say, you know, Johnny, would you like to get, you know, do you want to play with tractor? Let's get tractor. He says, huh? And then, then you say, the green tractor, let's get the green tractor. Huh? So everything you ask him or you say to him, he kind of responds to you with, huh? And I was just clarifying again just to make sure I was on the right track with, you know, my thinking with Laura, like, and I think this is the quote, what's up with that, huh?
Yeah.
Because he does it, and he does it. And this little guy has not had his hearing checked. It was recommended at intake, and it just hasn't happened yet. And I have asked Mom, yeah, you know, maybe we better follow up with that, even though I don't suspect it's his hearing.
Right,
but,
and that's what most parents think. They they think, oh, he can't hear me. But really, kids that can't hear you consistently at 1 and at 2 don't even know how to say, huh. You know, that's kind of an adult thing or an older kid thing where they learn the huh, 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 if they can't understand what you're saying. I guess the more adult response would be, what's that, or excuse me, or pardon me, I didn't get that. But for you know, kids, if you're yelling at them from another room and they don't know what you're saying, might say, huh. But I don't think two-year-olds say that when they can't hear. I think they just don't respond. If they, and that's what we were talking about when we first talked about this, and you said that too. Oh, I don't think a two-year-old would know to say hi then. They just aren't paying attention to you or don't even look up if it's a hearing problem at that age. So I don't think that's it at all.
No, and he responds in kind. It's obvious that he really does understand.
Right.
You know, if I say, do you want to go get the tractor? Well, he might say, huh? But he's running to get the tractor. So it's
right.
Pretty obvious he knows what I'm saying.
Right.
But his standard response, I mean, he must say, huh? Literally 50 times in an hour, maybe more.
I've had kids like that, too. And I think when we were talking about it, I popped out two kids' names and said, that reminds me of so-and-so and so-and-so that I've seen before. And really what I think that is, and this is, and I heard this in a seminar a long time ago by Dr. Rossetti, that's the creator of the Rossetti Infant Toddler Language Scale, and he teaches at University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh. And he says that children who say, huh, repeatedly like that aren't having trouble hearing you, they're not having trouble understanding what you're saying usually, it's that they are marking their place in conversation. And they have the turn-taking skills to know, okay, you talked, so now it's my turn to talk. But they don't have the vocabulary to respond with answering your question or making a comment or anything like that. So they've learned to hold their conversational place with, huh? Just like, I hear you, keep going. And I think some kids do it, you know, like he does, like to mean lots of different things, like yes, or that's a good idea, or I want to do that. Or some kids just do it, again, to say, hey, I'm still with you, give me more information here. Come on, keep talking to me, let's go, it's my turn to talk. This is all I got. Go ahead. So I think that's what it sounds like that he's doing to me, is just holding his place in conversation.
And that's what it feels like because, like I said, he's far too responsive to in his actions that, you know, it's like I know he knows what I'm saying because he is right there with me. I don't have any trouble getting him to respond as far as what he does or, you know, it's pretty obvious that he's with me, and that's just kind
right.
of his easy response. So I guess that would be his fourth word. Huh?
And I always feel like if I can spell it, it counts as a real word, and I would spell that H-U-H. So that's a real word. I don't know. I mean, I'm just playing. I'm being silly. But that really is a word for him because he uses it all the time. It's a response. So.
Absolutely. And he does.
Yeah.
He's cute about it. I said, I think I've had two others, one years ago, and then one that I just discharged a short while ago. And he started out, he lost that as he gained words. He dropped it. You know, once
yeah.
he could respond, he did respond. But when
and
he couldn't, it was, huh?
That's how the last little boy that did that, and he's actually a friend of, he's the little brother of a friend of my daughter's. So I still see him, and he's seven now, six or seven, and I don't think he does that anymore at all, although his mother, the last time I saw her, she was pretty cute about saying, you know, he still doesn't always listen to me, because she really always felt like it was his way of avoiding her, and I would say, no, it's exactly the opposite. If he were avoiding you or not wanting to answer or not wanting to listen, he wouldn't say anything. He would turn
right.
away or run away. It would be exactly opposite. You know, he's trying to keep you there and doesn't know how else to do it. So I'm not sure she ever bought that explanation, but I really thought that's what was going on with him. But he's doing well, too, and it did decrease the ha-ha-has as he got more words and had a bigger vocabulary and was able to use those words when he needed to. He was a little boy that I really thought had word retrieval problems, even at two. And that's funny because you don't ever see that as a diagnosis anywhere. But for him, he knew lots of words, and I didn't think he was really apraxic as far as motor planning. I just think he couldn't necessarily always think of the word that he wanted to say. You know what I mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Yeah. So,
and
I mean, huh? I
that. Would be a logical response if that were your situation.
Yeah.
Thinking.
I want to respond to you, but I'm not quite sure what you say. Yeah, he was a cute little boy. He's doing great now, so that's good. I like it when I get to follow them and see them as they get older.
Right.
And hear how they're doing.
This little guy, I think we're going to be at it for a while.
Yeah.
He's also the one. I had a third Laura question. Shall I go to that one? I don't think we talked about that one. Well, that one, same little boy, a thing he did this week, which I had not seen, and as I said, this was probably my sixth session with him in a row, 6 weeks. And it was actually, he happened to be kind of with his back to me as he was doing it, and his mother pointed it out, and she said, look, what's he doing with his mouth? And I looked, and by gum, he was opening and closing his mouth. I don't mean this in a negative way at all. What it reminded me of was like when the Muppets talk and their little mouths move, but nothing was coming out. It was just...
No voice.
Yeah, and it was kind of real exaggerated. Like his little chin was almost quivering a little bit, but he was moving his whole mouth. And I looked, and to be honest, I didn't immediately know, but then just, you know, a couple seconds later, he began to try and say open, and it wasn't open, but it did start with an O, something like, Oma, and I realized he's saying open, because we were playing with the tractor, and he was opening the back of the tractor. He was trying to say open, and thankfully, he had the O sound on it, so I did catch that he was telling the tractor to open, and then I thought, I think I know what that was. And I confirmed that with Laura during the week. And Laura, I call it oral groping. Is that what you call it?
Yes.
Yeah. And I had seen
that's
that
a
before.
Good, yeah, and I think it's a good term for that. And I said that a couple of weeks ago when I was overlapping with an occupational therapist with a little guy, and he did the same thing. Moving his mouth around, no real voice coming out.
No, this
out,
was
just,
totally silent. But he did it for quite a while. I mean, it was like he was trying to get that little mouth to say open, and all that happened was that his mouth opened and closed and nothing came out. And then just a few seconds later, he did come close on, Oma, and I thought, but it wasn't that fast. But he did say it probably 5 or 6 times, his approximation of open. And I've seen oral groping, but that was the most dramatic example I've ever seen.
You know, it's sometimes with some kids it's subtle. Like if you're not really looking at their little mouths, you don't see it. But with some kids, it is so pronounced that like the mom saw it and said, what's he doing? Yeah, and it is associated with motor planning problems or apraxia. And it looks like, boy, he's trying to get something out, but he can't say it. Some kids will do it with a sound, and they'll do it almost with a starter sound so that you think that they might be disfluent. But usually it's not really that. It's that they can't motor plan, and their little mouths and little brains and everything's working really hard, but nothing's really happening. And so they're groping, for lack of a better word, and that is an official speech therapy term, just trying to get the right sound, sometimes it's the right placement. Most of the time it is the right placement for their mouths. They can't figure out how to do it or can't make it work. I always kind of think about it as a little bit of a misfire, although, again, a neurologist might have a problem with me using it in that way, but that's what I think about. And some kids that do it on my apraxia DVD, remember the little girl on there that would, every time I would cue her to say a word or ask her to say a word, she would stick her tongue out. And that was her little go-to. I think she probably did it once, and then she did it a lot. And that little girl is not even 3 yet, but is doing beautifully, completely typical language development now once we kind of got her over that hump.
Well, then it couldn't have been apraxia.
Yes, it was. I swear to you. She met lots of those characteristics. I know you're being silly.
I'm teasing you because that's what some therapists think. If they make good progress and they come along beautifully, it couldn't have been, but... In my world, if it looks like a duck and it talks like a duck, it was a duck. If it responded the way apraxia does, just because it did particularly well doesn't negate the diagnosis in my mind.
Right. Well, that's why we do therapy. We want it to respond and want it to get better, and it doesn't mean that it didn't occur at the beginning just because their little systems kicked in and it all turned out great. So, but you do kind of see that with kids. And when I said... when the OT said to me, look at his mouth, and I said, that's called oral groping, and she said, oh, you know, know, I might have heard that term before. I don't even know if I've heard it called that, but that is exactly what that is. Oh, I'll know from now on. And I suspect OTs probably see that a fair amount because they might see a kid who's has some sensory challenges, has some fine motor issues, isn't playing very well, and then they see those little mouths, you know, struggling and aren't quite sure what to call that or might not have had someone point that out to them yet. So that's what that is, and that's what that's called, and it is interesting when you haven't seen it before to see it, and you go, oh, my goodness, look at that. So,
I guess the mom had not seen it. I didn't really clarify with her on that, to be honest, but the way she responded was like, what is he doing with his mouth? And
yeah.
I thought, you know, I know what he's doing with his mouth. There it is. But he's not an imitator yet. You know, he's just, if you model, he is beginning to use the word, but he hasn't been in therapy long enough and hasn't made enough progress to really try
imitate.
Yeah.
But he is popping out words occasionally. I mean,
he is
saying some of those words. And have you had those pop-out words with him? Because that's what we're going to talk about next. Has he popped out anything that you go, oh, my goodness, I can't believe you just said that, and then he can't say it again?
Well, you know, after the oral groping experience, I began to have a conversation with Mom about, and I prefaced it with, you know, I'm not a speech therapist, and it's early, and I'm not at all certain, but this does kind of look like a motor planning problem, and that's called oral groping. And I asked her a couple of quick questions. Of course, I was 20 minutes late leaving that session, but anyway.
Right.
Story of my life. Anyway, I asked her, you know, when Johnny was a baby, was he a quiet baby or was he a chatty? Did he do lots of babbling? Of course, I suspected I knew the answer, but anymore, and I hate to admit this on the podcast, but since we don't do initial evals with kids, that is something I would definitely ask every mother upon initial eval, but since we have somebody else doing them, I'm not always as good about asking those early questions. And to be honest, I don't think I had heard the answer to that question, so I asked it as I was leaving, and she said, oh, he was a really good baby, but he was very quiet. He was very happy. But no, he did not really do any babbling. And this mom has a daughter who's older, who by two, she has told me, was, you know, spoke beautifully in sentences. And now she has little Johnny, who's two and has three or four words. In his way, is very communicative and is very cute. But the word thing just isn't happening for him yet. And she said, no, he was very, very, very quiet. And I thought, okay, check that off my apraxia list. And then I said, how about, are there any times when, you know, you're so surprised by what he might say because you've never heard it before and you didn't even, you know, expect him or want him to say it. He just popped something out. And she said, that was a real trigger. She said, yes. I couldn't believe it. We were at the store this weekend, and my older daughter saw a piranha. And she said, piranha? Look, Mom, it's a piranha. And darned if Johnny didn't say, piranha. And she could not believe it because this is a guy, you know, vroom, vroom for tractor, buck, buck for chicken. You know, you would never expect him to say piranha.
Right.
But the stars aligned, it took a nice path in his brain, and darned if he didn't pop out, piranha. And she confirmed that, yes, there had been a number of occasions where the one he did with me so far was light. I don't know why, but the kid could say light really clearly. But he does. He definitely fits the profile.
Right. Well, what I was talking about with pop-out words is I have a comment from the website that I can hardly find I think this might be the original. I'm flipping through the comments as I'm sitting here, and I'm not very good at talking and reading at the same time, but I think this is it. This mom is saying her little boy is 2 years and 4 months old, and she says, out of nowhere, he said ancake for pancake while eating them about 3 weeks ago, and the next day he said ooking when I told him I was cooking. And then he came out with, oh, no, while pointing to a dog barking at a cat. And she said that she's tried to get him to say those words again. You know, she'll hear him say it, and then she says he never repeats any of those words. And she said that she mentioned it to her speech therapist, and the speech therapist told her that she's never, ever heard of a child who could say a word once and then not be able to repeat it. And that just made me giggle because I hear that, I see that almost every day, you know, with kids.
It's really pretty common in our world, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. So I wonder if her therapist is either A, new, or B, hasn't had lots of experience with pediatrics yet. But that happens a lot with toddlers with, and particularly with toddlers with motor planning problems, the apraxia that we've been talking about. It also happens with children with autism that they might say a word for a few days and then it's gone, or, you know, might have said a whole, you know, 10 or 15 words and then they couldn't say them again. This little boy doesn't sound like that, the particular comment that I was reading. He sounds to me more like it's motor planning like you're describing. He can pop it out, which is, I mean, that's a term that we see in the speech therapy literature. Pamela Marcella uses that term. It's called a pop-out word, and it's just what it means. They can pop it out one time, maybe, and then you don't hear it again. It just
kind of totally out of the blue, and you think,
yeah.
Who said that? And there's only that little 2-year-old sitting there with the big grin on his face like, I said it, but try and get him to say it again. No way.
Yeah, can't do it. It just kind of shot out of that little mouth before he even knew what he was doing, and he can't recall it or, you know, retrieve it back to, and not from the processing end, from the motor planning end, you know, from getting it to, I want to say that word again. He's not able to do that. So that is pretty common with toddlers with motor planning problems. And that in a history always makes me think, okay, let's start thinking about what the other characteristics of apraxia are to see if we can, if this particular child might have some of those too. So that's what I recommended for that mom, is that she go back and read some of those articles at teachmetotalk.com about apraxia and look through some of that. So
I would wonder about a speech therapist who would say that. First of all, like you said, that does
it happens a lot.
Yeah, it happens a lot with apraxic kids. It's almost part of the definition as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know,
right.
I don't think I've ever seen an apraxic kid that, or one I suspected was apraxic that didn't do that every now and again, if not on a fairly regular basis. And then, as you said, the other population is with autistic kids. And it's certainly very common with autistic kids. And it's, you know, a lot of times it is kind of echolalic. They may not really use the word functionally, but they hear it, or a phrase even, and they pop it out, and then wasn't really functional in the first place, so they don't necessarily use it again. But, and I've had moms who said, he used to say, you know, dad, actually this little guy, used to say daddy all the time, all the time. And now he's switched to mama, but he can't say daddy anymore. And he is not the least bit autistic. I mean, he's very social and very cute. And totally.
And he understands who daddy is. I mean, he doesn't
have
any comprehension problems at all.
Oh, yeah. He calls daddy mommy now. Mama now.
Yeah.
They're both mama.
Yeah. But he understands the difference. It's just
absolutely.
That motor planning. He just can't get that D back to be able to say it together. Yeah.
Right. And I've had moms ask me who had that history where they've lost a word or two. You know, he used to always say ball, now he doesn't say it. He used to always say doggy, now it's gone. And they're concerned about autism, and yet the child has no other signs or symptoms of autism.
Right.
And I don't say it usually in the beginning, but I'm thinking, no, it might be that other A word, you know?
Yeah. That's not it. Let me point it to you in a new direction.
I'm not going to say this, I always say, because those mommies say, do you think he could be autistic? You know, I'm really worried. I've heard that autistic kids lose words.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of a different presentation. That's, they had 10 words that they used routinely, and then over time, over a period of months, usually between like 18 and 24 months, they lose all, if not all of the words. And it's really kind of a different animal. Apraxic kids have one word, and they use it, and use it, or it pops out, and they don't use it again, but not all of their words. When they talk about autistic kids, it's usually, unfortunately, all their words. So, anyway.
Okay, moving on to another quirk. This was one that's come up with me this week, and then I had kind of a related situation, but kids who try to talk, and this has to do with apraxic kids too, I guess that's just, that motor planning thing keeps rearing its ugly head. but kids who will try to imitate you, but they do it with their mouths closed. And it might be a certain sound. Usually it's for the pattern that I've seen for that most commonly is a kid's trying to say a word with a G or a K or something at the back of their mouth. And so they say, but although I did have a little girl recently who's, I've discharged since then, but she used to always try to say shoes with her mouth closed. And it would be like, you know, I can't even do it like she did it. But she, that usually is associated with motor planning too, is that they can't, for some reason, be able to, you know, for, they're just not able to articulate that right. And they kind of lapse into that pattern with, let me try it this way, let me try it this way, you know, with, I'm going to try it with my mouth closed. And then, you know, keep kind of doing that over and over and over. So that's a thing that we see sometimes with kids. Have you had kids that do that, Kate, with a particular word or a particular sound group might try to keep their mouths closed to imitate a sound?
I have. I have one on my caseload right now. He pretty much keeps his mouth closed for a lot of words.
Yeah.
I mean, he is trying to say them, but it sure makes them hard. You know, they don't exactly come out right if they've got their little mouths tight. And sometimes I think if I suspect, I remember, I don't remember. I think it came up back when you were doing your research about oral motor exercises and apraxia,
mm-hmm.
and whoever you were resourcing at the time said, really, if apraxic kids tend to have oral motor problems, they're tight, they're not loose. It's not that they
right.
need to strengthen those little muscles. A lot of times they're pretty tight, and that seems to be somehow related to that closing their mouths and kind of clinching down instead of having the, you know, fluid movement and being able to
open
appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. The other thing that comes up with that are kids that are, and this is kind of a different issue, but when I heard this recently, I confused it with the kids that were talking with their mouths closed, but kids who get so excited when they're talking, and usually it's something that they're seeing that makes them so excited that they might clench their teeth and try to say a word. And that is not usually associated with apraxia. That's usually associated with kids with sensory processing differences, and it's usually what Kate and I would refer to in our slang therapy term as STEMI. But self-stimulatory is what we mean by that, and usually it is something visually that's excited them, like either a show that they like or something spinning or whatever other little visual thing that they like, and they get so excited that they try to say the word, and they might also be flapping their hands or wringing their wrist or standing up on their toes or some other little quirk that you would see with that too. And that usually is associated again with kids who have those sensory processing differences, and it they may or may not be on the spectrum, but typically when we think about that, we think about kids that are doing that self-stimulatory behavior, and they just, one of the things that they like that makes them feel good through their bodies is clenching their teeth. And have you seen kids, Kate, I know you have, that get so excited that they, it looks like they're making themselves shake. You know, they may not be hand flappers per se, but they, they tense up and they
quiver,
you know,
all over.
Yeah. And that sends shivers down a parent's spine sometimes because they haven't seen that before. They'll say, why does he do that? We don't know any other kids that do that. Or kids really stare at him when he does that. What is up with that? And that usually is a self-stimulatory thing. It's a response that they've seen. They usually do it when they're really excited. And, again, it's usually something visual that's made them have that response. So the person that I gave that answer to originally about apraxia may want to take a look at that again and, you know, really kind of reevaluate that situation about looking at it from a different perspective, a different diagnostic perspective. Kids will do it. Kids with low tone will do that a lot too because they can, you know, and sometimes they don't have control of their little bodies. Other ways, I had several kids with Down syndrome do that all over tensing up, shaking thing. And they've got sensory issues too, just kind of in a different way. They can't feel, you know, because of that low tone and that low arousal. But, boy, when they get really excited, they want to really demonstrate that they're excited and do their little shaking thing. So, you know, we see that with several different diagnostic categories and for different reasons, but those might be things that that person would want to look at again.
Okay, I'm going to backtrack, Laura, because I always tell parents this, and I'm bouncing back, like we said, all over the place today. I always tell parents with pop-out words, you know, we were talking about how apraxic kids will now and again pop out a word or phrase that you'd never in a million years think they could. And I always explain to parents that typically we see that in three different situations in general terms, and those are when they're really excited and happy, really, woohoo, something great happened, or they see something they love, and the other one is when they're really mad.
Yeah.
If they're really mad because their brother took their bike, actually I had another little guy who I suspect is apraxic, and he told his older brother, "That's my bike!" Well, he can barely say much of anything, but darned if he didn't scream at his brother, "It's my bike!" And the mother was in shock.
Right.
And then the other situation, so when they're really excited, when they're really mad, or when they're really scared.
Yeah.
And I always explain that that's why I, you know, opt for a really high energy, fun, play-based, excited, over-the-top approach to therapy, because you really are kind of simulating that excited situation form.
Heightened emotional, yeah.
Right, and that's why, you know, we like to hear, and we do hear on a consistent basis, how come he can say it for you? Because we're saying, ball, look, get the ball. And they get excited when we do that. I mean, we hype them up intentionally so that it makes it easier, because we're asking them to do something that's really hard for them. So it's only fair that we make it as easy as possible by getting them excited and having lots of fun. And, you know, so anyway, that was my tidbit on pop outs.
And that is great advice, and it's great for therapists to hear, too, because if you are dragging in there and it's your, you know, the 2 o'clock appointment, the 3:30 appointment, you know, you have played out, but you somehow need to still pep it up enough and ratchet it up a notch so that you can come prepared to raise that emotional response and that heightened awareness, so that kids that are like that need to kind of bump over the edge, I like to think about, and get that way. So as a parent and as a therapist, you have to make yourself rev up so that you can get their little systems going too. That's why it's really hard for us to do these kinds of jobs on days that we're feeling off. You know, you can't really do that kind of thing with a migraine. You know, I've had this shoulder issue, and I think, okay, I'm not going to pick anybody up today. I'm not going to swing anybody around. I'm not even going to bounce anybody really hard on my lap today, and darn if I don't do it anyway, and end up, you know, leaving the appointment barely able to carry my keys in my left hand, because it really, really requires that, and that kind of response. Okay, I think we have a caller.
Oh, good.
Okay. Hi there. Hello, are you with us? Oh, I can't get them.
I was actually just tuned in, so I'm not really sure what the topic is. I know that it's Teach Me to Talk, so I was just interested in what you were talking about.
We are a couple of therapists that work with children, toddlers with language delays. So you didn't have a question for us? You were just tuning in?
No, just tuning in. Just wanted to see what the program format was. So thank you.
Okay. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay.
You there?
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm having trouble operating that. Okay. What were we talking about?
Well, I bumped you back to
that heightened awareness, and that is why we want to do that. And this is what I was going to say. I'm glad we revisited this. That's why parents who tell me, you know, and therapists, I really just can't do all that playing stuff you do, and I'm just going to use this stuff like when he wants a drink. And, like, if he wants a book, and say if he, I don't have time to sit down and play with my child for 30 minutes like you're telling me to do. And I always, one, think, oh, my goodness, I've got more work to do here. so that they can see the responses their kid's giving. So, and two, I need to really educate them so they feel like they have the skills to be able to do it. Or three, they need a good kick in the seat so that they know, gosh, this is what my kid really needs, so I'm going to do it. You know, you have to get yourself and kids in the place where you're not distracted and where you can get up enough to play with them and do that kind of thing. And that's why those one-on-one play dates are so important for language-delayed toddlers and young preschoolers and even older preschoolers with their parents. You know, that's why Dr. Greenspan talks about the concept of floor time. It really does take that one-on-one time where you're not going to answer the phone or watch TV or check your email or do the dishes or anything else. And so when somebody tells me, oh, I don't do it when we play, I just work on speech, like, you know, through the rest of the day. And that's great. You need to do that too, but you don't need to sacrifice that play time, that one-on-one time where you're going to drop everything else and do that, because with these kinds of kids, you may not get those words consistently or get them in the spot where their little bodies or their little systems are even able to pop out a word or respond like that. So,
and it is, you know, that's one of our soapboxes. It really is a matter of able to do it, and that's what I mean about we feel like it's our duty to get them at the right arousal level, to get the heightened arousal level, because if we don't, we know they can't. And so many parents are, you know, parents kind of routinely assume he won't, she won't.
Right.
And it's like, no, he can't. If he could, Mr. would. I mean, he's with me. He wants to communicate. He knows what I'm talking about. He'd love to tell me what he wants to play with, but he truly can't.
Right.
So you've got to get him in the right place. And frankly, offering him a cookie or, you know, another cup of juice or whatever mundane everyday thing probably isn't going to do it.
Unless you're sitting there going, cookie, ooh, cookies,
it's yummy, then their eyes twinkle and you may get them, but not just saying, oh, cookie, tell me cookie.
Yeah, and you know, kind of in a walk-by while you're handing it down while you're on your way to do something else. So it really does take that focused energy and that one-on-one time where you're not doing lots of other things. So,
and let me interject. For those parents who are listening and thinking, what? I don't know how to act like that. It wasn't necessarily natural for me, and I've had the benefit of learning from Laura for, 12 years now? Go to her website, look at the DVDs. She has lots of examples, and it's amazing how much fun. You can make a cookie or you can make the ball that your child wants, and how you interject that excitement into what you're doing and what you're saying, and before you know it, you'll see how the kids respond. And, you know, it kind of makes me sad when parents don't recognize that, when they say stuff like, I don't have time, or, gee, I'm just not fun like you, or because what keeps us going all day, every day, even when our shoulders hurt and we didn't get enough sleep the night before, is is seeing that response and getting that desired response, and it's so rewarding and fulfilling. And it's kind of sad when parents don't really, even though I get it, I mean, it's not natural for them, and that's not the way that most mommies and daddies play with their children, but when you have a child with a delay and you're concerned about it, this is the game you play. And when you do, it's so fulfilling and so rewarding, and I really think just about anybody could learn to do it.
I totally think you can, and you really do have to force yourself to kind of do it at the beginning, but it truly works because it does get that heightened emotional response and makes it fun and keeps them with you and all those things that have to go into play. Kids who ignore or tune out really need that kind of play and really need you to help kind of pull them out of that and so that they want to interact with you and want to be engaged. So thanks for doing that little plug about the DVDs.
Well, I mean that. I remember years ago, Laura, this is going way back into our Indiana days when you and I happened to just bump into one another going to see the same child, and you were kind of leading the show, but I was playing along, and I thought, and that was the real eye-opening. At that point, I don't think I realized the importance of that, and I think I did some of it, but not nearly on the level that you do all day, every day. And that was when I thought, I need to, and your term is ratchet it up. I need to ratchet it up. And when you do, you see you get so much more of a response that it's like,
right.
So many times I go, you talk about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm thinking, I can't do it. I can't do it. And I drag my big bags in there, and I plop them down, and there's Johnny with those twinkling eyes thinking, the fun one's here. And I think,
yeah.
I can do it. I can, you know what I mean? It's really
yeah.
so rewarding. And they get so excited and so happy to see you that before I know it, I'm doing it. And the hour's over, and it was a great session, and woohoo. But even when I think I can't, I can. So I know that, you know, parents or other therapists. And I have that happen because a lot of times I share kids with speech therapists. Of course, it doesn't happen when I share kids with Laura, but when I share them with other therapists, a lot of times parents will tell me, he doesn't really like her. And I
yeah.
say, really, why? Well, she's just not very much fun. You know,
yeah.
this is how the way parents talk. And I always think, yeah, you know, she's just kind of coming in here and saying the words, even if she's trying to get them to respond and do signs. And she may use all very similar strategies, really. It's really just the implementation that's so different that she doesn't get them zoomed up, zipped up, and, you know, his arousal level up. So he's sitting there looking with dull eyes and thinking, whatever. You know, you're
yeah.
asking me to do something that's really hard, and I can't.
Right.
And if that same therapist would walk in there and be peppy and happy and fun and playful, and I know the kids can because they can with me. But that's
right.
So many therapists miss that piece.
I know, and it is something that I try to teach parents. And that on Teach Me to Talk, my first DVD, that's why playfulness is the very first strategy that I say before you do anything else, before you read another book, before you read another article, before you try to implement some kind of fancy schmancy thing, let's change this first. Let's just change how fun you are when you try to play with your child. Let's change, you know, your affect. Let's change your presentation. Let's change what you're trying to accomplish. And if you make joy your number one goal, sometimes it takes care of a lot of other stuff, you know. And granted, we want to still teach parents the, you know, those recasting and backward chaining and all those terms, you know. But it really doesn't matter if the kid doesn't want to stay with you and play with you and kind of have that keep it coming attitude. So playfulness, I think, is the most important thing, especially when you're working with toddlers. You might be able to get on autopilot and do it with older kids and be okay. I mean, I doubt a middle schooler would respond very well to this approach. But
I think they would respond to animated and goofy and, you know,
right.
humorous. It's kind of my favorite professors in college were the ones with kind of quirky, fun, entertaining
personalities.
Yes, they had a lot of usually I thought they were weird, but they were good, and I went to every class, and I enjoyed every minute. And
right.
if your approach is dull, oh, it's a long hour.
It is a long hour. It's even a long hour for the person, the therapist. So.
Doing it, yeah, and they
yeah.
miss
right.
the payoff. So.
Right. So it is an important foundation for parents and for therapists working in early intervention to be able to do and pull off. Okay, I want to get to this question, and I have this all the time, and boy, I had it yesterday with a family that I saw, and actually I had it a couple weeks ago with that same OT, with another OT with that same kid I was talking about. But the question, okay, when you're working with a kid that's minimally verbal, meaning under, you know, 10 words or so they just might have a handful of words, and they can say some sounds but not all sounds, do you cue the word or do you cue the sound? And usually I recommend for toddlers and for, again, minimally verbal children that you still cue the word and that you don't do a lot of, tell me, ba, 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 ball, or tell me, you know, pop, 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 pop. And so you want to really cue the word, and I think that's a mistake that a lot of therapists make, and a lot of parents make it too, when they're really working with the kids. So, you know, they think, and we've talked about this before on the show, they'll say, okay, well, he doesn't have very many sounds, so I have to get the sound first, and then we can make it into a word. And sometimes, you know, when kids are suspected to have verbal apraxia, that sequencing, you know, sequencing is a problem. They can't always get the consonants with the vowel sounds, But with toddlers, as a general rule, you really do want to stick with cueing the whole word. And so even though we might say, tell me more, we're hitting that M, we're still cueing that, or we're saying, show me your popper sound, come on, pop, 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 pop. But you're still cueing the word as a rule. You don't want to really cue every single initial consonant that goes with the word. Sometimes I think cueing the consonant makes it even harder at first for kids to imitate the word.
Because you're putting the hardest thing up front and saying, give me the hardest thing, instead of hoping you might get some approximation of the word.
Right. And who cares if it's a kid who has, you know, two words and you're trying to get a new word? Who cares if it's right or wrong at the beginning? You know, most of the time with those kids, I'm happy with anything I get. I'm happy with, you know, duh, even if we're trying to say more, you know, because they're trying and they're trying to imitate. And the imitation piece is what is so hard. You know, if imitating were easy, they probably wouldn't have a speech-language delay. You know, they're certainly not going to be on my caseload if they're great imitators from the beginning. You know, we get them as toddlers because they're not imitating and they're not just kind of naturally learning to repeat words like you see in children with typically developing speech and language skills. So you do want to just accept anything at the beginning, and you don't want to overcorrect it. And, again, you might cue it. And I tell parents a lot at the beginning, hey, I know that I'm saying, you know, I want to hear your tapper or your throaty sound, but I don't want you using that a lot here at home yet. You know, let's just save that for a therapy technique that – once a week, I'm going to try to do that, but I don't want you, every time you hear them trying to say cookie, you in there going, tell me, that's the wrong sound. You said tootie. I want, you know, cookie. So you don't want to, especially with a new talker, you don't want to really overdo all those sound cues. Okay, now that I've said that, let me back up. There is one little boy and one little family, and if they're listening, I've worked with him for over 6 months, and we get muh a lot. And so at that point, you do kind of want to cue those sounds, but again, you still keep it within the word. You know, I'm never just having him say, you know, for cookie without me. I might say, okay, listen, it's my throaty sound, cookie. You know, I'm still cueing that whole word because, as a rule, getting a word from a toddler is easier and makes more sense to them than a sound. So I hope I'm not sounding like I'm telling you one thing and doing another, but as a general rule, we go
for every rule there is an exception.
Yeah.
So
right,
you know,
right.
I have a little guy that I suspect is dealing with apraxia. Yet another boy. I'm your little protege, aren't I? All my kids. He's another one, and he sees a speech there. He also has some sensory things, but you know, at first I thought, could it be spectrumy? And then now I think, no, I haven't seen him for long, and he's almost three. So anyway, I've kind of decided, no, I think, and, you know, we talked about the two A words. I guess, you know, we've touched on this before. It does seem to me that a lot of kids who are on the spectrum and they are autistic do also have a lot of characteristics that go hand in hand with apraxia. So there is kind of that crossover there. And sometimes it's kind of hard to determine exactly, well, lots of times it is. But anyway, this little guy sees a speech therapist, and I asked the mom recently how it had been going with speech or whatever and what they've been doing. And she told me that she was working on vowel sounds. And I thought, vowel sounds? Oh, I wonder how he likes that. You know, I mean, I wonder how significant
that
is
for you.
Yeah. It's like, okay. I said, how's that going? He doesn't really, you know, try and say it or anything. I thought, well, why would he say A, E, I, O, and U? I mean, really, how is that relevant for a two-year-old? But, yeah, I totally fall in the school that says go for the word, go for the word.
Right. And you know, you can
take what you get.
And as a speech pathologist, you're thinking, I need to fix this kid's vowels. Great. Go for it, but do it with words. Think, okay, we're going to have snack, and while we're doing snack, we're going to say open to get an O when we're opening that bag. We're going to say eat for eat and work on that long E. You know, I'm going to hold that cookie up, and, you know, he's going to have to tell me, you know, he's going to have to do something with up. You know, I'm going to be thinking, how can I make this? How can I get a vowel in a word? Yeah, so that's how you do it with that. To work on vowels, I would be doing animal sounds with him and, you know, having the cow say moo and the pig, you know, the pig and the horse and all that. And so you can do it. You can think, okay, the therapeutic goal is working on these vowels, but you better get it in play so
give
that it's
him a
in
word
context
that he might possibly
sense.
Use, not
yeah.
A, E, I, O, or U. And if you
yeah.
do, it's going to be meaningful and he's going to be much more motivated to play along with you. I always use a lot of those terms like in and on and up and out,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
because those they like. They kind of can be bossy with them when they have it, you know.
Right.
They like those power words just like adults do. And if you teach them those words, they tend to use them, you know,
right.
up, out. And I do kind of exaggerate the vowel sound, the initial vowel sound, because kids...
And you're working on vowels.
Right.
Yeah, you're doing the same darn thing. But it makes sense to a toddler, and he ends up with a word he can use,
mm-hmm.
and you've met that little speechy goal of working on vowel production. So, yeah. I
didn't even know I was really working on vowel sounds, Laura. I was just going for any word he might possibly say.
I know that's what you think you're doing, but subconsciously, I know somewhere
No, I do use a lot of those in the beginning. And it is interesting, kids who can't imitate anything, those are going to be easy, along with the animal sounds or the other environmental sounds. Those kind of, what are those? Prepositions?
Exclamatory words.
No, like
prepositions.
Yeah.
Prepositions,
yeah.
Location words, yeah.
Yeah, those they like, and those
yeah.
they can use those pretty functionally, you know.
Yeah, I thought you said suppositions. I was going to say suppositions. What is that? Prepositions. Okay.
Preposition, yeah. Those words they like, and they are good because
yeah.
you can really kind of exaggerate, out, and, you know, they almost
right.
never say out. They say out, but, hey, that's so much better than nothing.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And they mean yeah. out. They may be telling me to get out by the time the hour's over. I'm pushing them
they
really
are
hard.
Not. Your friends love you. All your little friends adore you. They are not telling
well,
you.
Well, I try.
They cry buckets when you leave.
Yeah. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But, you know.
Well, it's kind of sad when they do cry, so.
It is.
I know. You think I have to go? Okay, we have reached the end of this hour. I still had two big questions that we're going to talk about next time. One is related to questions. What do you do with younger preschoolers or older toddlers? What does it mean if they're still stuck on no or still just echoing the last word of a question or a choice? So we're going to talk about what that means and kind of how to work on some of that in therapy. I also want to talk about foreign language again, with children in multilingual and bilingual homes, because, boy, I get a lot of questions about that on the website.
You do, and I have that going on right now with the kid that I just picked up.
Yeah, and I've started getting questions routinely from speech pathologists about how do I do this. So next time we're going to talk about that, kind of a two-part show, because I think I probably have more to say than we ever could have talked about today about these things. So foreign language or you know, multiple languages in homes, and then processing questions and kids that get kind of stuck on things. So we're going to talk about those things next time. But if you have a question that you really want answered, please email it to me at laura@teachmetotalk.com. I will say one more thing. I'm starting to get some emails from people who really want me to read a long, detailed email, and then they'll say, but please don't share this with anybody. And I think, oh, then why'd you send it to me? So most of the questions that we get are going to be shared on air. So change some details, change some other things. Tell me not to use your name. That'll be fine. I'll be glad to honor that. But otherwise, I'm going to use your stuff because I think other people would want to know those answers. And most of the time, if somebody's sending a comment like that, other people have that same question. So change some details so nobody will recognize
right.
you.
Right. We don't care anything about the specifics. We just like
the
topic.
And I won't even say it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just the topic. That's all we need to know. And I think today I was really careful not to even say names on anything. So we'll start to do that from now on unless a mom says, you know, address it to me so I'll know what you're talking
well,
about.
Well, the funny thing is every child I've ever seen has been named Johnny. So there you go.
Yeah. Which is my husband's name. So it's so funny. Every time you say it, it makes me alert a little bit. So that's funny. Okay. All right. Thanks so much. We'll be back same time, same place next week.
Okay. Thanks. Have a good
thanks.
One. Bye.
You too. Bye.